acti.ca/searches or call us at 1-866-369-5118 to check your eligibility and fill out a claim form.
Test the man from Tester Logic. You're listening to my favorite radio station, CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
If you're young at heart, for it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind. If you're young at heart, you can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh till your dreams fall apart at the seams, and life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth when you're young at heart? For it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind when you're young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. And here's the best part, you'll have a head start if you are among the very young at heart.
Good evening and welcome to Older Women Live on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are by, for, and about women from a feminist and generally progressive perspective, and we come to you monthly every second Wednesday of the month from 6 to 7 p.m. We've got a packed show for you today featuring two important and related topics, homelessness and housing, especially as it relates to older women. My part of the show features an interview with Caitlin Feather, Director of Shelter and Housing for Le Chenon, a women's shelter and service organization that caters to women in difficulty, especially as regards housing. The second half of the show features our sister collective member, Brisna Kashach-Rowe, bringing us a follow-up to our show of last year featuring the Mont Carmel Seniors Residence. Now, Brisna will be bringing us an interview with one of the older women leading the struggle against the current landlord of the building. So let's get started. I first asked Caitlin Feather to tell us a little bit about Le Chenon.
The Chenon is a women's shelter. We also provide other housing options as well. We are particularly for women in difficulty, which means that we serve women 18 years and older, no matter what their difficulty is, who are in search of a safe place to stay. We provide shelter, meals, psychosocial follow-ups. We have multiple different services based on the needs of the women that arrive at our door or who call us, ranging from three-night emergency stays up to permanent housing, transitional housing, different units as well for follow-up. But we also have a community follow-up program as well that follows women in the community who are living in private apartments with subsidies from the government and as well as psychosocial follow-ups.
So you really have quite a wide mandate there, a large age group and lots of different kinds of housing options that you follow up with.
For a continuum from emergency to full-time permanent housing.
Do you have shelter also on your premises, or you have an office and you provide the shelters elsewhere? Or both?
No, we have, in our main building on Esplanade, we have shelter services, short-term stay, which is up to 8 weeks, and we have long-term stay, which is up to a year. After that, we have our supervised apartment building, which is also subsidized, which is 49 units, And then we have our, which is Maison Saint-Marie. And then we have our Maison Yvonne Maison Neuve, which is 15 studios that are for women 55 and older. And that is more of a permanent situation, or at least until they find something more adequate to their needs. So that's 15 studios. And then we have about 50 women that we follow in the community.
The 55 and older, this is the audience that we cater to on our show. Our show is called Older Women Live. Homelessness is really a big problem in, well, everywhere, but, you know, in North American cities too, given that we're supposed to be more rich and have resources and everything. I mean, it's pretty bad. And in big cities, like in Montreal, you see a lot of homeless people, but mostly what you see is the men on the streets. But we know that there's homeless women as well. How is it that we don't see them as much as we see the men? They're not as visible if we're walking around downtown or certain parts of the city or whatever. We mostly see the men.
Women's homelessness is considered very different from men's homelessness in a lot of ways, primarily that it is often not seen as much because we call it invisible homelessness. What that means is that it is really unsafe for women to be on the street, especially an older woman on the street. It is incredibly unsafe, and there are shelters and there are resources for those women. However, if they don't know them, often what they will do is find other ways of have temporary housing. So they will stay in motels, they will stay in hotels at the beginning of the month when they receive their revenue. They will stay with friends. They will put themselves in romantic relationships to be able to have a place to stay. They will do sex work. They will become nannies. There are many, many different creative ways that women have found to find shelter, even if it is temporary, to stay off the street because it is safer. However, sometimes those situations are not safer. They put themselves at risk for domestic violence, intimate partner violence, sexual violence, financial abuse. Those situations can be very difficult when somebody is taking advantage of a vulnerable person trying to find refuge. So those are generally the women that will come to us after. Are those who have tried to make ends meet in other ways, using their social networks, using their resources, family, friends, children, neighbors, colleagues. They've tried many different things and they have no more options, or they have found themselves in a very unsafe situation, trying to find safe housing, and they arrive at our door.
I remember seeing some programs on TV where some women, if they're lucky enough to have a vehicle, if they lose their apartment, then they live out of their vehicle as long as they can.
That is also something that we see often.
Now, for older women, I imagine that that's a lot harder to do things like couch surfing, or maybe some of them are too low income to own a vehicle. And, you know, let's be realistic here. The romantic relationship option is not usually available to older women after they reach a certain age, or they start to look older, quote unquote, right? There's older women who have lived in small apartments for many, many years, and therefore they're kind of rent controlled as compared to newer apartments. But then, you know, if the building gets sold, you see what happens. We have rent evictions and other ways of throwing people out so that the new landlord can gut the building and make fancy apartments and condos and charge very high rents. What happens to those women? These older women, they've been living in a place for, I don't know, 30 years. And, you know, there's a lot of these options that we just talked about aren't available to them.
For sure. So we definitely have seen an increase in older women arriving at our door in the last couple of years. And a lot of their stories are justly that they've been in the same apartment for many, 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 many years. They are very used to their neighborhood. They're very used to their corner store, their neighbors, their landlord. They had a routine. It was very set. They had their habits, and they had a very limited social network, but it wasn't necessary in that time. And then what has happened with this new phenomenon of renoviction, and with, let's say, a spouse dies is that social network and that those resources aren't there to help that person find another place to live. And so she finds herself in the street very quickly. You know, a lot of these people, their kids are grown, they live far away, they're not in the neighborhood anymore, or their family is also older and can't take them in. We end up in these situations where they don't have resources around them to be able to take care of them in those situations, and they end up in the street very quickly. We had somebody who recently came to our door who her spouse had died, and her name wasn't on the lease, and she found herself on the street very quickly because she had no resources. She had no family, she had no friends who were able to help her, and she wasn't able to find something quick enough within her budget to be able to be rehoused. And that's unfortunately a reality that we're starting to see more and more of. And we've had situations where a woman has gone to the hospital, she's lost some of her capacities with the mobility, she's not able to use her apartment anymore, and in the meantime, making changes to her apartment, the landlord has increased the rent, she's no longer able to pay. We have a lot of these unfortunate situations with being able to support the older population in finding resources and finding stable housing.
So, Le Chenon, are you operating at capacity right now? Do you have to turn people away? And what happens when you have to turn these women away?
So we are operating at capacity, full capacity, unfortunately. And we do, unfortunately, have to refuse women every day. However, we don't refuse them and close the door. We work with our partners. We work with other shelters, other resources to make sure that anybody that doesn't find a place to stay with us for the night has a safe place to stay for the night. We work with our other partners to see if there are beds that open up for the night, if there are other resources that can be put in place. We will work with the woman until we find something that she'll be able to feel safe in, until we are able to accept her in our services when a place opens up.
What percentage of the older men are homeless as compared to older women who are homeless? Is there any data around that's available?
Unfortunately, I don't have the data on that right now. However, in the last fall, Montreal did a census on homeless people called the Dénombrement. They do it every couple of years. We had one in 2018, one in 2020, and last year was 2022. And it's a census on all people who are living without a stable home. So they work in the shelters, on the street, and they do this all over one night. Make sure that we don't count anybody too many times. And that data should be coming out in the next couple months, which will be able to really give us an idea. It gives us a global portrait of what homelessness looks like in the city at the time. And we can see how it's changed over the years as well with the multiple different contexts that have contributed to homelessness in the last couple of years. We will be able to see in the data how the demographics have changed and what the sources of homelessness are as well.
Where would you obtain that data once it's been issued?
I believe it will be published. I'm sure there will be a press release for that. It was done conjointly between the city and the healthcare services.
So it'll probably
come out on the public health website.
Oh, like the Ministry of Public Health, you mean?
If I'm not mistaken. But if you do a Google, you generally find it fairly quickly.
Does Le Chenon also work... Do you also do, well, let's say more like social justice action, like let's say more in the political sphere? Are you part of any lobbying organizations or lobbying on your own to get the government to try to do more to work on this problem or to provide more resources for the people who need it?
We are part of the Mouvement Médecins Anitinaires House à Montréal, which is a regroupment of multiple services and shelters and different resources surrounding the issue of homelessness with the common goal to put an end to homelessness. We work very, very much with them forward certain agendas and certain practices on how to better treat homelessness and better prevent homelessness. And we work very, very closely with the other shelters as well to make sure that we're serving the population the best way that we can. We receive financing from the government as well as from our foundation and our store, the Shano Thrift Store. So we also work very closely with the healthcare services that provide financing for us about what we need and what the needs of the women are currently and what programs we need to develop in the search for financing.
What is your role in the organization?
I'm the director of shelter and housing. I'm involved in managing all of our services around the women, our encampment, and our coordinators.
I imagine that you also interact somewhat with the residents or with potential residents who come and ask for help and they're in really bad situations. How do you deal with all that? I mean, you must hear some really incredible stories that are really difficult to hear.
Oh, for sure. We definitely hear terrible, terrible stories. But when a woman arrives at our door, even if she has lived absolutely terrible things, there is always an inspiration of hope when she comes to our door that we're going to be able to make a difference with her and that this is the first step towards something better. And we do believe that, and we do the best that we can with what we have, and we work in an unconditional welcome for all women who come to our door. And there are some that we'll only see once, and there are some that we will see regularly. But even if we were there just a moment in their path, then the moment in their path is the one that we accompany them in, where they're at. And we'll be there again when they come back. The women really do speak of hope and looking forward to the future and having optimism. They're definitely women who show up and they don't know how they're going to make it to the next day, but we're there the next day when they're ready. That's what we hold on to the most when we're working directly with them. The Shano has always been a home for women in difficulty. We've been around for 90 years.
Wow.
And we've had multiple different stories within there of different populations of women that we have accompanied who are in difficulty. And something really magical about this is that it remains a home for many of them. And they continue to contact us and write letters and come visit to tell us about how well they're doing and where they are in their lives and what has happened since they've left our services. We have holiday meals where they're invited, and it's almost like a reunion for a lot of them to see old friends and old family, really, when they come back and they tell us how they're doing and what's going on and how their kids are doing and their grandkids and all of that. So we get to see those success stories as well, and we get to talk to them, and we get to see the tangible differences that we made while they were with us.
Is there anything that somebody who's listening to this interview, is there anything that we can all do to help and support and try to do our part to eliminate homelessness?
Well, I think being aware of the situation and being informed on the situation is already a really good step forward. Knowing what's going on and how that impacts more vulnerable populations. For sure, financial contribution is possible. We always appreciate any little bit of help that we can get, or another resource or another service that speaks to your values also. And I think if you do see women in the street who are having a hard time, just saying hi and asking how they're doing. Sometimes they really do feel alone and isolated, and sometimes just having that little conversation with them can really help as well. Remind them that they're people too, and they're citizens of our city, and they're important. I think those are definitely ways that the average citizen can help out, and participating in different marches and different activities that raise awareness are really helpful as well.
Demographically speaking, the women aren't all white Quebecois. There must be a sizable number of women who are women of color or from other disadvantaged groups.
Yes.
Do you have any idea of the ratio of that?
Statistics in the last year have shown us that we received about 1,500 women in our services. Of those women, about 10 to 15% are over the age of 66. On top of that, we have about 12% are in precarious immigration situations. So refugee, asylum seekers, they're not residents and they're not in the process of residency yet. So very precarious situations. I would say we do not keep a statistic on necessarily visible minorities. However, we do have a fairly diverse group these days that pass through our services. We do have white Quebecois, we have American, we have women from other provinces, we have a lot of Latina, we have a lot of Africans as well, Haitians. We also have had an increase in Asian with Southeast Asia, who have started being in our services a little bit more, First Nations as well.
Yes, I understand that there's a lot more Inuit homeless people, both men and women, I think, than there used to be.
I think we've definitely noticed an increase in our services.
The Plateau Mont-Royal is considered trendy, hipster kind of area, you know. There's a lot of gentrification going on. Do you get women who used to live there as well? Do you notice, like, in terms of the neighborhoods, anything significant around that? Are there greater numbers in some places than others?
I don't have any data or facts around specifically homelessness based on neighborhood or region. However, the census will really actually be able to tell us that because it was done by region. So it'll be able to let us know a little bit where we have pockets of homelessness or where the demographics are different than other agents as well. But we'll always see a higher concentration of vulnerable populations around resources that provide basic needs. If they're day centers, food banks, we will definitely see a higher concentration in those areas. However, we also know that people in a homelessness situation are known to travel very far to access different resources and won't necessarily stay always in the same area. They can be very migrant sometimes based on what their needs are and what resources can provide them.
If somebody would like to find out more about your organization, do you also accept volunteers to help you? Or if they want to make a donation or whatever, can you give your website address or phone numbers or places where people can contact you about this?
For sure. For finding out more about us, volunteering information, how to donate, go straight to our website, which is lechenault.org. So lechenault, lechenault.org. And all of our information is there, including information about our services as well.
Okay, and then there's a phone number there if anybody wants to call you if they want to make a donation, they can do so on your site and so on. I'd like to just thank you very much, Caitlin Feather, for your time and for sharing all the information about your organization. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take
so much.
Care.
Keep
Repo, R-E-P-O, with a song called Frozen from her album A Mountain of Me, released way back in 1998, but that song is unfortunately still relevant today. Just a quick reminder that you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and this program is Older Women Live, coming to you monthly every second Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. I'm Laura Yaris, your co-host for today, and I'd like to thank Caitlin Feather, Director of Shelter and Housing at Le Chénon, for her time as we discussed homelessness among women. If you'd like to know more about the organization, make a donation, or volunteer, you can visit their website at lechénon.org. That's lechainon.org. They even have an online boutique where you can buy secondhand clothing and other goods, or you can also visit their thrift store. The address is on the website. And not only support a good cause, but also avoid contributing to the fast fashion industry that causes so much pollution and waste. Special thanks to our sister collective member Rosemary Wally for setting up the interview for me, and to Brisna Kashakro for the next half of our show, coming up right now.
Good evening, dear listeners. This is Brisna Kasharo from Older Women Live, OWL, CKUT, 90.3 FM. Struggles defending tenants' rights in senior residences are very difficult, expensive, and time-consuming. However, despite all these obstacles, it is possible for residents to win. Here we have an example. In January 2022, 200 tenants of the private senior residence RPA Mont Carmel received eviction orders from the new owner of the building. With the help of Quebec Solidaire, Manon Massé, community groups, and many others, they organized themselves and engaged in a struggle to defend their rights. The new owner wants to transform the RPA Mont Carmel into a regular tenant building. On April the 7th, 2022, three members of OWL Collective, Laura Yaros, Marlene Rateau, and Rosemary Wally, interviewed Suzanne Louisle and Constance Baudrin, two of Mont Carmel tenants and members of the Safe Mont Carmel Residence Committee, and Manon Massé from Quebec Solidaire, to talk about their situation and struggle. At that time, the residents had decided to apply for a permanent injunction in Quebec Superior Court. Tonight, we have the privilege of interviewing again Constance Baudrin. Let's welcome her. Thank you, Constance, very much for taking the time to share your experience with our listeners. And here we have the first question. Constance, could you please tell our listeners what happened after our interview with you in April 22, when you and Suzanne informed us about the decision of Mont Carmel residents to take legal action?
Yes, Brisna, thank you for this very good outline of what is happening at Mont Carmel. I must say, since February 1922, or since April 2022, when we talked, so much has happened. As you say, there was the rejection that we had of the eviction notice in February of last year. And we have been in court a few times for other things, and especially for prolongation of certification. Because this is given by the judge 6 months at a time only. So since our necessity to be in court and for other points, the judge has to rule that, he will prolong the certification. So we have done that a few times, actually. And this present time, we are until December 23rd, I think. On July 26th, actually, we had a safeguard order by the judge meaning that the owner had not, since the owner had not given, obeyed to the orders of the court regarding meeting room, you know, the meeting room that was closed, library, then the swimming pool, the emergency cords, the televox, and many other things, we were really without services. And they, you know, we're not sure that the nurse was there. We were not sure that there was somebody at the reception desk, which is supposed to be 24/7. And so we sued the owner for court contempt. And this meant that you know, that could take a long time. And in fact, it is taking a long time. The ruling is expected this coming Tuesday. So this should be, you know, news that is important to us, because it means that we can carry on, we can go to something else, because we have other things in mind, actually. On July 2022, the owner demanded that this case should be dealt with at the TAL, at the Tribunal Administratif du Logement, and not at the Superior Court. So in September 2022, the judge, Le Lucier, ruled that Superior Court had the authority to take over this case. But the owner went to appeal. He appealed the court. And but the Superior Court ruled again that the Superior Court has authority to do it. So, but then the owner appealed, and so we are still expecting the judgment on that. We don't know yet what the ruling will be. We expect that this week as well. It should end. The 2 months should end now sometime this week, at the end of the next week. The owner has appealed again. Well, this is it. The ruling is to come this week, sorry. On September 2023, there was, we are going to have a hearing regarding damage and interest, damages and interest. And we are suing the owner on that because, you know, we were without services for a long time. And we pay for that. You know, we pay, it's in a part of our lease. These things are, many things are part of our lease. And so we are suing, and they're afraid of that, actually. This could be a lot of money, could be a lot of damage for them in interest and all that. So this will be dealt in September. But the main issue, which is the Sales Act, where there was a clause saying that it should remain an RPA, and it was not, it was, how would I say, the owner didn't bother about that. 2 weeks after signing, he just sent us an eviction notice. So it means that this has not been touched yet. But so many other things, so many suing have gone, you know, are happening, so that the main thing is pushed back all the time. But I mean, in the meantime, I think that you know, we are waiting now, and this is where we're at. We're in the wait, in the, you know, expectance of a ruling, of two rulings, actually. Yeah. There we are, just to resume a little bit, you know.
Thank you, Constance. Yeah, I know when you say that the main thing is being postponed, you are referring to having the place as an RPA certified, but it's being that you have to renew it every 6 months. Is there any way that that could be approved permanently, that it stays as a RPA residence permanently?
Well, this is the way the court works. I mean, this is by law. You know, they cannot go beyond 6 months at a time. So, you know, this will go on as long as the main issue is not dealt with. You understand? So they will not give permanent, no, so far anyway, at the moment, no.
Okay, yeah, I think you are very, very brave, and all of you have organized well to take on this struggle. And what do you think are the key elements that have made this struggle successful? Because even if you have to renew it every 6 months, at least you have achieved the right to stay in that building and having the judge, the Superior Court order that it has to be an RPA residence.
Mm-hmm. This is a very good question, Brisna. I think that we find that growing in continual support from the outside, and by outside I mean our families, our friends, a great number of organizations throughout Quebec and locally, our deputy Manon Massé, as you mentioned before, two good lawyers we have, the unions, of course, the unions are helping us a lot, religious communities, and so many other people, our mayor and local councillor as well. I mean, we have their support, we can feel that. But also support from within, the residents themselves. I mean, the committee would be nothing without the residents supporting us, obviously. So at the moment, we're about... We're 80 residents there still at Mont Carmel. The others have left, or you know, they had good reasons for leaving, and they are not taking in any more people. You know, over 65, they refuse people who ask, you know, an apartment. So this is wrong, actually, but they can do it. This is it. What we are defending in court is the well-being of the elderly people, for a housing for them, respect and dignity, quality of life, milieu de vie that is suitable. We are noticing how much simple we all care for one another. This is, you know, we're finding that at the moment, and this is helping tremendously. Since the beginning of this struggle, you know, people have come together, the residents have come together, and more, and we are like a family, more than before even, you know. And that's why, I mean, people are getting, I don't know, they feel uplifted, they feel, yes, we're going to win. We meet them every Wednesday, we have a meeting with the other people in the building, with our people, and they tell us what's going wrong, what they feel is going wrong, what they see is going well, better. And we tell them how things are going on from our side. And we work out activities, because we have our room back now, our meeting room back. But I mean, after a lot of struggle, really a lot of struggle. So, but at least we can meet. Our library has come back again because we struggled for it. We fought for it. And also, because of the generosity of people, I mean, we are hopeful, because also we can because working with lawyers, I mean, it does cost some money, and so the generosity of people through a fundraising campaign through GoFundMe has done tremendous result. Really, we're very happy and grateful for that. So this is it. I mean, and also I would say the committee itself, I'm part of the committee. And I must say that the six of us, we have various talents, and according to the availability of each one, according to their capacity, whatever, you know, we can contribute to the committee and to the cause. This is a tremendous help, I must say. I'm very privileged, I would say, to work with these people on that matter, because, I mean, I've always worked for human rights, international solidarity and all that, you know, so I feel I'm in my element now at the moment. It's in that way. So all this is, obviously, we're determined, you know, to win. And this, to achieve that, of course, we're working on the changing the legislation, you know. And at the moment we're meeting, we will have a meeting with Madame Duranceau, the housing ministry, who has agreed to come and meet us at Mont Carmel on the 17th, July 17th. So this is great. We find that we will be able to talk to her. You know, she's coming to meet us. And this is a good opportunity. We need to do that. Yeah. And also, I would say, of course, media coverage. You know, this has been tremendous help because, you know, that we had a documentary that was made by Nouveau, the channel Nouveau. And this has done tremendous result as well because it has reached so many people, you know. And it does give the, how to say, the, you can see the life, everyday life at Mont Carmel in that documentary. You can see how we struggle and, you know, they you get the feeling. Also, there was that invitation at Tout le monde en parle. I don't know if some of you saw that, but I mean, it was a very, very good opportunity to reach people throughout Quebec. Because we're not only working for Mont Carmel, we're working for everybody, you know, all the seniors' home that is are going through this kind of struggle, you know, and they're not all organized to do that like we are because we have a main issue, which is the Sales Act. This is the thing that is the core of the problem, you know. So these are, I would say, the key elements are these things. Maybe there are more, but I feel that this is it, yeah. Where we are.
Okay, thanks, Constance. Yes, I agree with you. All of those elements have contributed to the good results you have achieved so far. But I have to say that it also starts from the subjects, meaning people that are affected and have to carry the struggle. And it's really impressive that even, at the age we are, I mean, when we are seniors, we have less energy and all that, but we still have the possibility to give a fight to defend our rights. So I really am impressed with these achievements. And you mentioned about one of the elements being the media coverage. And in that sense, I have my next question. So far I have seen a lot in French language, but not in English. So my question is if you have had any significant English language media coverage.
Well, that's a good question, I would say, because I said this is very important. And from the very beginning, I must say that the CBC, CTV, they've been very active. They were there at the very beginning. You know, and they were there in the winter, they were there in all the weathers, you know, and to film us and to, and also I would say there was yourselves at CKUT, and but we feel that maybe we would like some written coverage as well, and we cannot find that in the Gazette, for example. We never had any. I don't know. At least it hasn't reached us, Facebook or other websites, or you know, to reach other population. This could be interesting as well. We have that in French because we have a committee. We have a small committee, two people working on communications outside our committee, outside our residence. You know, they're extremely active and very, very efficient. So this is very helpful to us because we cannot do everything. So, you know, they prepare communiques for us and with our approval, of course. I mean, we check all that. But I mean, this is the kind of thing we have in French. And unfortunately, I don't know. Maybe it does exist somewhere and I don't know. I would love to know though. But normally these people, these two people working on communications, they are, they are linked to all those things that happen, you know. There are a way to reach them, but I don't know in English. Maybe you know a little more. No, not really.
No, actually, no. I have been searching for English coverage, and I didn't find much. That's what I asked. Okay. But it's good to know that there were some already at the beginning. And probably we could continue visiting your case and see how it continues. I have another member of our collective, Laura Yaros. She's searching other senior residences and interview them. And in this program, we are going to put yours as an example of how you can win struggles and other situations as well. So perhaps that will help a bit.
Let us know, Brisna, please. Sorry. Let us know if there's any more that join in, you know, from the English world.
Yes, for sure. Yes. So I don't know if you would like to add anything else about your struggle, or actually it's our struggle. The reason why I'm so interested is that I am getting there. So I am preparing myself. And it's good that our listeners do that too.
Yeah, good. Well, I would say that what is the most important thing is the dignity of the human person, the dignity of the seniors. To me, this is really essential that we struggle for that. And this is being very badly treated at the moment, as we know. But we can do very little if we're alone.
Yes.
But if we act collectively, if we get involved collectively, we can change a lot. You know, this is something that we must be convinced of, because sometimes people say, well, I can't do anything, and you know, when this comes, it comes to that. But I do feel that, you know, getting together too, we get informed, we tell others, and trying to get involved somehow with other people. And media is very important here, of course. And this is the first thing we did, you know, when we got the eviction notice. We got together the next day, and we said, no, this will not work. We're rejecting this eviction notice. We've got to do something. So we decided to do a letter, an open letter to the media. And we did that, and it came out on the Le Devoir. The next day, on the 3rd of February, this came out. So, I mean, immediately, you know, it went out. And this is, to me, a way of getting people involved. You know, this is another way. So, and talking to you is very uplifting, really, in the sense that we know you care. We know you... you are behind us, and you support us, and you're making it known as well. You know, so thank you so much, really.
Well, it is our pleasure to help, even with a tiny bit. But we are. That's our purpose, to help this struggle to really get the best results possible. And you mentioned that the Sales Act is really the main point of this struggle. So you would say that the next step is working towards changing that Sales Act. Is that correct?
Well, we're not trying to change that in the sense that it has been signed. The Sales Act has been signed, including that clause saying that there was, you know, it had to remain an RPA. So this is done. So we this is what we're fighting for. Other places, it's more difficult for them to fight if they don't have a core point. I don't know what you call that, your main point like that, because this is what is going to save us. If we win, I mean, this is it's through that. Okay, through that point that we will win, and we're very hopeful anyway. But because this is so obviously so wrong, you know, to sign something and then not to go ahead with it, you know, to change it within a few weeks. You have that in mind, obviously, from the beginning. You know, making money is out. You go, old people. You know, poof. Yes. We want to renovate and then make money. This is it.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
Yeah.
So, but the core, the main thing is that sales act. So, but this is the kind of, say, the before we reach that point, we're going through a lot and going through what do you call that, mise en demeure. I don't know what you call that in English, mise en demeure. Or anyway, you know, to send a letter to the lawyers saying, you must do this, you must do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And also through, I'm lost, but let me see now. You and this is it. So we do have a lot to do, a whole lot of suing we did. Cases and suing the law, the owner in court, and we have to have the rulings on those before we start doing, you know, the last. And they are trying to extend the lawyers, the owner is trying to extend that, because he's thinking, obviously, they're all people, you know, it will come to an end.
Yes.
You know,
yeah,
they don't understand that. So they will go eventually. So, but I don't, maybe it's costing him a lot of money and maybe he doesn't like it. This is what we're hoping, that he's going to decide that, well, you know, maybe I'd better sell, or maybe I'd better before going into bankrupt, you know.
Yeah, I think that the problem is when profits are given priority over the well-being of people. And that is what is happening in this situation for the owner. I mean, what is important is the money, and he doesn't care about.
And the thing is that, you know, what is happening at Mont Carmel with our owner, I mean, it's also the same owner is doing the same thing, has done the same thing in Quebec City, exactly the same thing. He's done another thing, same thing in the north of Montreal, in three other places, you know. So, I mean, he's doing the same thing. He doesn't want to know anything about people. I mean, out you go, and this is it.
Yeah.
Incredible. So you're so right in that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a company that owns many buildings, and is, that was my interpretation. But...
And he's a young man, so there must be a whole lot of people behind him and, you know, around him, so...
But we have to continue the fight. And
you're so right. Yeah, and we're very hopeful. We, with all the support we get from you and others, I mean, we feel we want to go forward and and win that.
Yes,
it's the most important.
Yeah. You know, our show is going to be broadcast on July the 12th. So I am going to contact you or search for information to see what the result is for the. July the 11th hearing.
Do you get our newsletter?
Yes.
Communiques, you get the communiques?
Yeah.
Okay, so Mont Carmel. Okay,
yes.
Good.
Okay. Yes, we do.
So you will get the information through that immediately as
okay.
it comes out.
Perfect.
Okay.
Okay, so I wish you the best, that everything goes the best possible for all of you. And I really admire your struggle, and let's continue with
Thank
that.
You so much,
okay.
Brisna.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And all of you people.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
Good evening. This is Brisna Kasha-Ro from Older Women Life, OWL CKUT 90.3 FM. Continuing with the Mont Carmel case, the Superior Court had hearings scheduled for Monday, July the 11th and Tuesday, July the 12th. On the first day, the two parties, Mont Carmel residents and the new owner of the building, have made their case. The hearing took all day, and the judge will render his decision on another day. Let's stay attentive to find out the results. On our last show, we talked about the situation and the options people in Guatemala had through June the 25th, 2023 elections. For about 70 years, this country has been ruled by corrupt political, economic, military, and criminal networks that dominate every institution of the state. These rightist, corrupt governments ruling us are formed by the sons, daughters, and grandchildren of the executors of crimes against humanity during the internal armed conflict. Moreover, the sectors in power have made themselves very rich while keeping Guatemala occupying first place in Latin America for extreme poverty, with the highest level of global inequality as well. Powerful elites made sure that candidates against this corrupt system were not registered to participate in elections. Yet, the results of the general elections first round took the corrupt politicians by surprise, and they immediately yelled out, "Fraud!" Bernardo Arevalo, with his party Semilla, got second place. He is the son of a former 1944 revolutionary president. The leading party is UNE, a corrupt one that has been in power before. The difference between the two parties is less than 3%, and the new vote got the highest percentage. The results clearly reject the corrupt system in place. At the request of rightist parties, the Attorney General, the Constitutional Court, and one magistrate of the Supreme Court, usurping actions that are not in their mandate, stopped the officializations of the results so that the winning candidates of the first round would not go into the second round. The Supreme Electoral Tribunal carried out a review, and the results show the same two parties previously announced as winners. Still, the results were not ratified. Meanwhile, people tired of this situation have demonstrated in the streets, and indigenous authorities called to block roads all around the country for 3 days. In the first round, if the first round's results were not officialized. Finally, on Monday, July the 10th, a plenary session of the Supreme Court of Justice declared the ballot review results to be good and completed. The struggle continues to democratically elect a progressive government in Guatemala. This is OWL, Older Women Live, CKUT, 90.3 FM. Thank you and have a good night.
Did you undergo a strip search at Riviera de Prairie or Bordeaux detention centers between October 11, 2016 and March 20, 2020? If so, you could receive up to $2,000 per eligible strip search. Hurry, you have until March 5th, 2024 to fill out the claim form. Visit proactio.ca/searches or call us at 1-866-369-5118 to check your eligibility and fill out a claim form.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
ladies and gentlemen, friends and comrades, to Amandla Radio here at CQT 90.3 FM in Montreal. This week we have the sad news of the passing of Michere Kitai-Mugo, who was co-author of the play The Trial of Dedan Kamanthi with Gugiwa Tiongo, and it's a sad moment indeed. As well, we have a broadcast produced by Stefan Christoph that will play in its entirety. Thank you. Stay tuned to Amandla. We also have a piece that Stefan Christoph from Free City Radio has put together about a Ghanaian refugee in Holland. So we'll play that in its entirety. Stay tuned to Amandla.